Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to a very special edition of Wrestling Nostalgia. On April 3rd, the world lost Flying Fred Curry, and we're going to spend this episode remembering both the man and the wrestler. Joining me to do that in the first segment will be Supermouth Dave Drayson, former manager, photographer, who worked with Fred and knew Fred, and he's going to talk to me a bit about the career side of Fred. And then in the second segment, joining me will be Mike Curry and Fred Curry III, two of Fred's sons, who will talk to me also about his career, but a lot more about Fred the man, Fred the dad, etc., etc. Fred's going to definitely be missed by the wrestling world. I knew Fred, talked to him a few times, met him a few times. He was always a great, great guy. I was a huge fan of his. So he will definitely be missed, and of course, you know how I am. I had to pay tribute, honor, and celebrate the life and career of Flying Fred Curry. So let's take a break. When we come back, we will begin that celebration with Dave Drayson.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time, I'm being joined by a former pro wrestling photographer and manager and a current YouTube creator and wine connoisseur, Supermouth Dave Drayson. Sir, how are you?
Hey, Dave, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing very well, and it's good to talk to you, Dave. Not so good with the circumstances, but we're going to talk about Flying Fred Curry, who recently passed away. And I recently... Well, the night before you and I were talking, I spoke with Fred the Third and Mike, two of Fred's sons, and we talked a little bit about Fred, kind of the man, the dad, that side of him a little bit. But you and I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about Fred the wrestler, and go over.
Well, it shouldn't be a sad day. It should be a celebration of Fred Curry.
Well, definitely. I mean,
he definitely was, you know, one of the greats of Detroit's big time wrestling, and, you know, a lot of places around the world also. Let's start with his name, Fred Curry Jr., mm-hmm. Son of Wild Bull Curry. Fred was born on June 12th, 1943 in Hartford, Connecticut. In school, he was a great athlete. You know, he took wrestling, track, and football through grade school and high school. He spent 4 years at the University of Connecticut. And then when he graduated from there, he really didn't start as a wrestler. He was a teacher at Madison Heights Junior High School. And the weird combination of that was, you know, Madison Heights Junior High School is that George Steele or Jim Myers also coached at Madison Heights Junior High School, but in Michigan as opposed to Connecticut.
That's funny.
Yeah, and as, you know, once his career started, he really started as a referee up in Halifax, Nova Scotia, you know, traveling with his dad, Wild Bull. Mm-hmm. He made his, you know, professional wrestling debut on June 26th, 1963, against Boris Malenko at the Boston Garden, at the old Boston Garden.
Yeah.
He made his, you know, debut. He was learning the ropes, and you know, Bull came into big time wrestling in Detroit for the Sheik, and they were good friends, you know, wrestling down in Texas for years.
Yep.
And Fred came into Detroit with Bull, and he made his debut in 1964 in a tag team match with Lou Klein. Oh boy. But they went against Dr. Bill Miller and Hans Schmidt and came up on the losing end. But he made a big impression of the fans. And I remember being there at that show. I don't remember much about the match at all, but I remember the crowd really liking this young kid, you know, Fred Curry.
Yeah.
His second bout, you know, 2 weeks later at Cobo Arena was against the Beast, Evan Cormier. And that was another loss for Curry, but he made, you know, good strides. And from that day on, he was a fan favorite, started winning some matches, started getting, you know, working his way up the card, you know, not always in the preliminaries, but he made, you know, his, you know, mark in the mid card. And he, you know, eventually got into the main event, you know, usually against the Sheik or one of the other top heels.
When I talked to his sons, we said that Sheik Curry feud was a big feud in Detroit over the years. And if it hadn't been for a guy named Bobo Brazil, it might have been the feud in Detroit over the years. But that was a long running, intense feud there in Detroit, wasn't it?
Yeah. Over the years, starting in 1967 is the first time he went against the Sheik, and all the way up until 1974. So, you know, a good 7-8 year spread that not every show did he go against the Sheik. But, you know, the Sheik was, you know, going against all the, you know, top baby faces and some of the top heels, too, like Pampero Firpo and, you know, so many Wild Bull Curry, so many others. So it was an interchangeable, you know, thing, you know, going from, you know, Bobo to Fred Curry to Pampero Firpo to, you know, whoever else was, you know, hot in the territory.
Yeah. So how early in Fred's career there did he start developing that drop kick that he became known for?
Oh, right from the beginning. You know, you could tell he was a great athlete, you know, well, great body, you know, not overly muscular, but you could tell that, you know, he was fast in the ring. One of the original high flyers around here, you know, post Leaping Larry Shane.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because you hear all the stories about how many and how quick Fred could throw them. And when I talked to his sons, it was like, it was kind of Fred's fish story, right? It, depending on when you talk to him, was how many he threw and how long he threw it, you know, whether it was 20 or 10 seconds. They said every time it would shift. But nonetheless, he could throw multiple drop kicks in a very short period of time. It was very rapid fire. And his son said he would throw them whether the opponent was ready or not, was there or up or not. He would.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the, you know, most I've seen and, you know, sort of people, you know, associated with, you know, Detroit big time wrestling is that, you know, he did 14 in a row. And I'm not sure who the opponent was, but that's the number that we have here, that he did 14 in a row.
Yeah, and they said it was when he did it, it was very much right at crowd participation, right? The crowd would count the drop kicks.
Oh, no doubt about it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know, another thing about him, you know, his legacy is that, you know, being a fan favorite, but he was a 9-time tag team champion here. Yeah. I mean, you know, he tag team with Billy Red Lions, Tony Marino, Louis Martinez, Bobo Brazil, and a host of other guys. You know, so he never won a singles championship here, but, you know, he was a 9-time, you know, tag team champion.
Yeah. And a little bit later, you managed, right? Did you ever get to manage against Fred?
Yes. One of the few times was for George Cannon's Superstars of Wrestling up in Toronto. Yeah. Fred Anbull came in to help out because George Cannon was going against the Tunnies up there.
Yeah.
And we'd always film once a month TV at, I think it's CHCH TV, the global network.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the very first time Fred came in, at the time I was managing Handsome Hartford Love and Eric the Red.
Yeah.
And in one of the final, because we always taped four shows. Mm-hmm. And you always wanted to save that, you know, last show, you know, for the best.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would always do on that fourth show is, you know, get involved, take some bumps, stuff like that, you know, get the crowd going, you know, good TV. So this particular fourth show, Eric the Red went against Flying Fred Curry.
Uh-huh.
And then in the dressing room, you know, me and Fred talked about it, says, well, let's get this crowd really popped, you know. So at, you know, toward one point in the match, I'm going to interfere. Fred pulls me into the ring. Eric's outside the ring and I'm, you know, like panicking, you know what to do. And Fred grabs me and he throws me into the corner and I do one of the, you know, Ric Flair, you know,
flips into
the corner.
Yeah.
Only bad thing was, I told Fred, throw me towards the, you know, TV cameras.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when he cornered me in one of the corners closest to the cameras. And he threw me into the corner, the opposite corner, near the fans.
Yeah.
So I go upside down, and the next thing I feel is, whoa, some old geezer in the front row with a cane stood up and he just came through that bottom rope, nailed me. You know, one of the guys who was also on that show, Big Jim Hutchison, remembers that to this day. He says, man, I remember that old geezer cracked you good and we heard it all the way back here in the dressing room. And it did set me for a reel. But then, you know, Fred did a, you know, promo after, you know, about me and Eric the Red and, you know, how he's going to come and clean up, you know, the thing. And, it, you know, it all worked out for the better. It was great TV.
Yeah. One thing I was talking to, talk to us a little bit about the one time that Fred kind of flirted with being a heel and he had to get straightened out by Bobo Brazil. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, it depends on, you know, where in the territory. It started at Cobo Arena. I believe it was in a tag team match that I forgot who their opponents were, but it was Fred and Louis Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in the, you know, toward the finish, you know, Fred attacked Louis Martinez and the fans couldn't believe it. You know, they were going nuts. And it's like, you know, he, you know, gets on, you know, the microphone and starts, you know, cutting a heel promo. And all of a sudden, being the fan favorite, you know, he was almost hated as much as Bull Curry was.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next amount of weeks, Fred was going against, you know, some of the, you know, local baby faces and stuff and going over. And at one point, you know, I'd say 2-3 months into this gimmick, He went against Bobo Brazil, and you know, during the match, you know, it was, you know, typical match, heel versus babyface. And then at one point, Bobo Brazil, you know, gave him the cocoa butt, and Fred's like staggering around the ring, wondering what the heck is going on. Bobo gives him another one. He's, you know, what's going on? And it sort of like brought him out of his amnesia,
yeah.
You know. But depending on where in the territory, that was at in Detroit at Cobo Arena.
Yeah.
But it also happened, I believe, in Dayton. Could have been Dayton or Cincinnati, where Fred went against Bull Curry, you know, the father versus son thing. And at one point during the match, you know, Bull gave him one of the, you know, knuckle shuffles, and Fred, you know, starts, you know, dazed and stuff. And he's coming out of this sort of amnesia that he had of being a heel. And then it was all, you know, fun and games from there. You know, he's back as a fan favorite, but it was a heck of a, you know, good angle for, you know, a short few months.
Yeah. Well, and Fred, he had a really great run at Texas as well in the early to mid 70s, teaming with Fritz and everything else. Were you aware of that at all at that time? Because I know you were out, you were doing some traveling, you were exchanging clips and all this stuff with other people. How aware of, were you in the Detroit area of what Fred was doing in Texas?
We were aware in the dressing room mainly. The fans themselves really didn't know.
Yeah.
They thought, you know, he took a hiatus and, you know, he just wasn't appearing on the cards.
Yeah.
But, you know, not only was he down in Texas and doing very well, but also in Hawaii. And,
correct.
You know, when I talked to Fred, when we did our big time memory show with Terry Sullivan, you know, I talked to Fred personally and said, you know, we're doing this tribute, you know, to you. And I just want to get some information and stuff. So some of the questions I was asking him was his favorite territories. And he said his favorite territory was definitely Detroit and big time wrestling. Number two was Texas, and number three, Hawaii. And also during that conversation, I asked him, you know, who were, you know, some of his favorite opponents to go against.
Yeah.
And, you know, it shocked me. His favorite opponent of all time to go against was Killer Carl Cox. You know, so that must have been down in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, Cox was, you know, he was a hell of a heel, you know,
yeah,
in his day, you know. And he also said he loved going against the Hells Angels, Ronnie and Paul Dupree, or Chris Colt. Uh-huh. And he did mention some, oh, Fritz Von Erich. He said he loved going against Fritz Von Erich.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, well, naturally that would have been down in Texas.
Yeah.
That's
funny. It's not the names you would really suspect him to come up with right off the top of his, but it shows there's a different perception, right? For what fans see and how the wrestlers, how that, you know, what they're experiencing. So that's unique.
But I also asked him, who's his least favorite guy to go against? And who would you think that would be?
Sheik.
No, loved going against
the
Sheik.
Yeah,
you know, that was an easy match for him.
No, who was
he told me it was Bulldog Brower.
Oh, well, okay. He's, Kansas City.
he said it's the stiffest guy he ever went against.
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, man. See, mostly my memories of Fred is there towards the end of his career when he was doing the Bruiser Bedlam stuff in Toledo, Detroit, yep. Toledo with Jerry Grimm Jr. And yeah, he was still super popular at that time and still working and, you know, and doing great stuff. But it's incredible the longevity of his career and the stuff he was, he was doing.
No doubt. And it didn't seem, you know, for as many years as, you know, he wrestled and being a high flyer, especially, you know, it didn't seem to hamper his body like, you know, so many other wrestlers that, you know, were, you know, because I saw him the last time I saw him. Was at a CAC convention in Vegas, and he looked great, you know, great physical specimen, you know, wasn't overweight. It didn't seem he was walking with a cane or crutches or, you know, in a wheelchair like so many other guys that were there at this reunion, you know, were, you know, so many guys, their bodies were just destroyed from, you know, years of working in the ring, but it didn't seem to hamper Fred at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he lived a, you know, great long life and then, you know, had many years after he retired, you know, and everything else. So tell us a little bit about Fred personally, right? As you got to know Fred, you know, in the locker rooms, you know, on the road, different things. What was Fred like away from the ring?
He was pretty quiet in the dressing room. You know, before I became super involved, you know, as a fan, I remember a gal, Chris McConnell, had the Fred Curry fan club.
Okay.
And I was friends with her and I belonged to the fan club. And, you know, I got to meet, you know, Fred with her a few times and he was pretty quiet. And then when I became the photographer for the Sheik and Big Time Wrestling, you know, I'd be in the dressing room and stuff. And Fred was always, you know, one of the quiet sorts, you know, yeah. He wasn't, you know, around bragging, boasting, you know, being boisterous at all. But I remember him always talking about Ohio State football and him betting on football, you know, college games.
Yeah.
You know, and as a younger kid back then, you know, it's like, you know, I didn't bet or anything like that. I didn't know much about gambling, you know, besides, you know, my parents playing cards, you know, pinochle and euchre and things like that. That's what I thought gambling was. Yeah. No, but when he would talk about betting big money on some of these college games, it just, you know, befuddled me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over time when I got in the business of managing, you know, the first time he saw me as a manager was up in, you know, Canada. And, you know, he walks in the dressing room and, you know, he looks at me, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And he thinks I'm there to take photographs and stuff. And then over the course of, you know, the next hour or so, everybody's getting dressed, putting on their ring gear and stuff. Well, I'm changing into my manager outfits and he's looking at us like, what are you up to? And I said, well, I'm managing. Who? And I said, you know, Hartford Love and Eric the Red. And he just couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's almost, you know, not only me, but, you know, the same thing like, you know, I'll say Jim Cornette, you know, started as a photographer. There's, you know, definitely photographs out there of him, you know, shooting photographs ringside. And, you know, I just saw one the other day with him standing, you know, with his camera over there were taking Andy Kaufman out on a stretcher. You know, so it's like, you know, him, me.
So many guys. Scott Romer, Dave McClain.
Paul E. Dangerously.
He started
that way. And, you know, I still have photographs in my files. I still have photographs in my files, you know, from those guys when they were photographers,
right?
You know, so, you know, it's weird how, you know, wrestling, you know, guys get in the business and, you know, what we do and, you know, more than anything, I'd like to, you know, say I'm like the big time wrestling historian. There's not many people left, you know, especially wrestlers who worked in this territory.
Yeah.
You know, now, you know, we lose Fred and, you know, he one of the giants. So not many guys left.
Yeah. I've always loved Fred and always had an admiration. I've talked to him several times, you know, met him a couple times. And he was always really nice to meet, you know, really pleasant and just.
Yep.
And everything else. And, but he's one of those guys. I don't know. It's a weird word to you. I always view him as underappreciated, right? And it's a lot of it's timing, right? Because he wasn't in the huge boom, TV boom, the cable boom.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, the video is not, you know, there's video, but it's not as wide. You have to kind of search it out a little bit. But, and I was talking to his sons, Fred with the drop kicks and his style that really, he really helped to shape wrestling a little towards the future, right? Because I know it's weird for us to think now with the multiple drop, but that was unique then. And
yep.
So in his way, he was kind of laid a lot of the early foundation for a lot of what the guys do now. He would probably hate me saying that, but, you know, because that was, I mean, he was, like you said, it's weird to call him a high flyer, but that, in the day, that's what he was. And that's what he was.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you go back into, you know, wrestling lore, you know, like one of the first high flyers that really made a name for himself was Leaping Larry Shane, of course. Then along came Fred Curry. And then right about the same time Fred Curry was Rocky Johnson. Yep. And Rocky Johnson, you know, was a hell of a dropkick specialist.
Yep.
You know, so those three guys, you know, really set the standard for, you know, who after those three, you know, really was known for their dropkicks. You know, I can't think of anybody.
Maybe,
you know,
Jim, but, maybe, you know, Jim Brunzell. Well, he did that, you know, a little bit.
But, okay. I never saw him work, so I'm sorry to say.
No, it's okay.
But, you know, yeah, but you go into, you know, I mean, we're, you know, guys like you and me and so many others, Tom Burke, and, you know, we're a dying breed, you know. We read, you know, stuff online, you know, like, oh, the top 10 wrestlers, or, you know, who's the Mount Rushmore, and, you know, who's the greatest, you know, drop kick, who did the greatest sleeper hold, who did the greatest figure four. None of the guys from our era are never mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, it's always Ric Flair, Randy Savage. Oh, the greatest match, Randy Savage versus Ricky Steamboat. Not saying it wasn't a great match, but best of all time? No, no way. You know, you go back, you know, I always say in my personal eyes that I saw was, you know, Cowboy Frankie Lane and Chris Colt. Most amazing match I've ever seen in my life. But
yeah,
there's so many others, you know, like Jack. I seen Jack Briscoe and Dory Funk go at it. I seen Dory Funk and Harley Race. You know, these, you know, giants of professional wrestling don't even get mentioned these days.
No.
And those were the, you know, forefathers of everything that these guys are doing these days.
Yeah.
You know, sorry to say, but, you know, I really wish that, you know, people, when they speak or, you know, put something out there online, that they do their research first.
Sure.
You know,
and you brought up that's an interesting topic, and you brought up an interesting name, which I always associate with Fred Lynn, Fred Lynn's a baseball player. You mentioned these lists, and people, a lot of people will talk about who is the best baby face of all time. And the name that everybody always throws out there is Rick Steamboat, right? And no disrespect to Ricky. He was a great babyface, whatever else. But, come on. I mean, to me, greatest babyface of all time, that's Fred Curry. I mean, he's at least got to be named in the same breath, right? In that same discussion. How could you not?
Of course. You know, there's just, you know,
but
numerous, you know, but thousands upon thousands of guys who could be put in that category.
Sure.
You know, I could say Bobo Brazil and Tony Marino, and, oh God, there's just so many others. Yeah, I mean, you can even say Lou Fez. You know,
every territory had a Rick Steamboat, right? At least one.
Right.
Had that guy.
Bruno.
Yeah.
You know.
Being from Indiana, I don't care if everybody in the state, they may not know wrestling at all, but it seems like they all have a Dick the Bruiser story. You know, so every territory had that. And again, I don't mean any disrespect to Rick Steamboat, but, you know, it's, you got to go deeper than the cable era. And
no doubt about it.
And I think if you do, Fred Curry should be in a different level than what, you know, people thought. I mean, he should be discussed with more of these guys, right? He did so much, right? You know, laid the foundation. I mean, a lot of what he did, the guys in the 80s, quote unquote, were just took from what he was doing as a baby face with the drop kicks and the style. I mean, a lot of that's Fred Curry.
Yeah. And, you know, for the great career that he had, you know, starting in 1963, you know, his career lasted until 1990, you know, and his final match, Fred Curry went against Sabu. Mm. August 4th, 1990, at the Toledo Speedway in Ohio.
Unreal.
That was his final match.
Which is such a cool thing to think, right? Obviously, Sabu, the nephew of the Sheik, and that's such a cool, I mean, right, the lineage there. It's, you know, with the Currys and the Sheik and his family go back. So, I mean, because, you know, you can think Fred Curry and the Sheik, but it's also Fred Curry and Bull Curry, like you mentioned, Bull Curry and the Sheik. It goes back, right, that... And I talked with his sons about that, right? The Farhats and the Currys were close, right? The families were close.
Oh, very close.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Fred, you know, once he retired, he just didn't, you know, go off into oblivion like so many other wrestlers do. You know, they retire and you never hear another word for him. You know, his name, you know, kept, you know, popping up because he was training his sons.
Yeah.
And, you know, they became, you know, if, you know, they really didn't make it into the TV, you know, thing to where they can, you know, be shown worldwide. You know, they were more on the independent side, but still on the independent side. If you look up on YouTube and some of their matches, man, it's just like watching Fred as a young kid again.
It is. Yeah. I mean, and if, you know, his Fred the Third, he said that too, right? He talked about how he modeled after his father, right? He called himself the Rocket, you know, to play off the flying thing. And he, you know, he would take the drop kick and would think, well, what's the new take, right? He'd do it off the top rope and different things, just, but, you know, paying homage to his thing. You know, and Nick is great. If you watch Nick Curry, and of course, then there's Mike, who I don't believe has wrestled, but Mike is doing a lot online to help preserve that Curry family legacy, right? Sharing a lot of videos and stuff on TikTok and whatever the kids are doing, and helping, right? Trying to help show a little bit of that side. And
well, it was a couple of years ago that Fred Jr. Got a hold of me because he was gonna start writing his book after he, you know, did his father's book.
Yep.
You know, and he really didn't have a lot of photographs.
Yeah.
And I sent him hundreds of photographs, you know, to use in his book, you know, and it still hadn't come out. He was still working on it up until the day he passed, you know, so hopefully, you know, one of the kids will take, you know, that, you know, material that he's got and put a book out on him, you know, it would be great to read it.
Yeah. Mike mentioned that. He said he has all those, he has piles of handwritten notes from Fred where he was working on that. And he has all that in his, he said one of his goals is to organize it, put it together, you know, smooth it out, whatever he's got to do, and get it out there. That he's one. He said he hates that he didn't get it done before Fred passed, but he still intends to do that. So
I certainly hope so, because you know, he definitely deserves it. Has a great story to tell.
Absolutely.
So maybe we can get, you know, the great book that Brian Solomon wrote on the Sheik. Maybe we can get Brian Solomon, and, you know, because it lives in that area, you know, maybe help out on that and, you know, get that project going.
That would be great. Yeah, there's so many. I mean, so many of these guys, right? I mean, there's tons of books out there, but there's still so many that I would love to read definitive, well done books on, right? And Bobo, right? Bobo, no one's done a definitive book on Bobo. And that's such a fascinating. I don't know. It might be hard to dissect through a lot of that information and everything, but that's okay. That's part of it, right? I mean, that's part of the story. And
so many guys from that era that really deserve. Bobo, you know, definitely deserves. Fred, Pampero Furpo, Fritz von Erich, you know, more than anything. You know, even though they did the movie, you know, on the kids and stuff and Fred involved, but it really made Fritz look bad.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get on the side track, but Fritz had a whole career before the Suns that should, I mean, to be talked about on his own. I mean, that's fascinating. Even if you don't even get into the era with the Suns, there could be a whole book just on that part. And there's so many guys, but I hope they do finish. I'm going to keep pushing him, right? I'm in contact with him. I'm gonna, every so often, I'm going to reach out and say, hey, Mike, how's that book coming in?
I
definitely want to read it. Okay, Dave, I'm not going to keep too long, but thanks for coming on and talking about Fred. And let's wrap it up with this. We've talked about how guys from that era, right, are often overlooked, underappreciated, et cetera, et cetera. Say you were writing the annals of wrestling history. How would you want Fred Curry and his legacy to be remembered?
Oh, just a tremendous athlete, tremendous wrestler, a big fan favorite, came in, you know, whatever match you saw him in, it was memorable. You know, his drop kicks, the way he sold for his opponents, he was, you know, a consummate professional, you know, whether he went over or, you know, he lost, it didn't matter. You know, the fans, you know, sometimes if, you know, a wrestler loses, you almost think, oh, the guy's career is over. You know, the fans, you know, could care less anymore. He's going to go down on the card and, you know, he's going to be in the opening bout with, you know, the Magnificent Zulu or, you know, one of the Lou Klein trainees. But Fred, that never happened. He always, you know, he went over a lot, you know, made it into the main events, semi-main events. When he lost, you know, he came right back, you know, with a victory or two. And, you know, he always made the guys he went against look great.
Yep.
You know, and I can't say all the time the guys that he went against made Fred look great, but yeah. Fred made himself look great.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody wants to question the popularity of Fred Curry, just go look in the album. It's documented. 1972, most popular wrestler. It's there.
Yep.
If you want to look at the number, no denying it, right? He's there. So it's 1972. That's an accomplishment. I mean, that's at that time with the names that were out there. So,
again, if you look over my left shoulder here,
yeah, the pennant.
I got the Flying Fred Curry pennant right next to my Sheik portrait that was painted for me by superstar Billy Graham.
Oh,
so nice. I'm going to leave that up there. And, you know, when I come into my office here and look at that, you know, I'll say, you know, the Sheik is going against Fred Curry today. And, you know, Fred may get the fire. You know, he may get the camel clutch. But, you know, the Sheik's going to take a few drop kicks, too.
Yeah. Well, again, yeah, it's unfortunate Fred passed, but he did have a nice long life, nice long career. And and I always say, right, if there's got to be a silver lining to losing these guys, it's hopefully it will raise the awareness a little bit, right? There's lots of people now mentioning Fred Curry. I think I keep saying, do I keep saying Fred Lynn? Do I keep mentioning, I don't wonder what that is. Anyway.
Yeah, it's baseball season.
It is. I got baseball in the head. But hopefully these guys that are mentioning Fred, right, will continue to talk about him, continue to remember him. So I try to find the silver lining that it's nice to see the love, but it's, let's maintain that, right? Let's keep talking about Fred and let's make sure the guys that are still around, let's appreciate them while they're still here to know it. So, cause there's not, all right, they're not many, right? We're losing them. And,
right. And so, thank you for, you know, doing the celebration of the name of Flying Fred Curry. Much appreciated, my friend.
Absolutely. I had to, right? How could you not? I mean, unbelievable. Yep. So, and of course, when I thought about it, Dave, your first name popped in that, you know, that I wanted to have on here to talk about Fred and his career. Because, you know, Detroit, Fred, Dave Drayson, it's all intertwined. You can't think of one without the other. So,
thank you.
I think I did one time 20. But, I mean, the guy was hidden a while with. He just lay on the mat and stick his shoulder up. I said, man, get up. I can't move. I can't move. It was tough. You know, it's not easy to throw. It's hard. If you know what you're doing, it's easy.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by two of the sons of Flying Fred Curry, who we lost on April 3rd. Mike and Fred the Third. Guys, how are you?
Doing great. Well.
Great, good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm okay.
All things considering.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I want to leave with, right, obviously, my condolences, guys, for losing your father. We lost a guy we looked up to, a guy we were a fan of. But it's different for you guys, right? You lost your dad. It's different. So, yeah. But one thing that always comes out of this when you talk about personalities is that outpouring of love, right? I've been pushing for years talking about Flying Fred Curry, and now it's so great to see everybody else showing that love, you know, making posts and everything else. So let's talk through a few things. Let's start a little background, right? Obviously, go back from Fred. Your grandfather, Wild Bill Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk, because how can you talk about the Currys at all in any way without at least mentioning Wild Bull?
Well, Wild Bull Curry is one of the greatest legends in all of professional wrestling.
Definitely.
And Mike has been chronicling this through our TikTok channel. So Bull Curry, he was a beat cop in Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day he went to Detroit. This is a short version. There's all kinds of versions of stories about how Bull Curry became Bull Curry.
Yeah.
But the professional reason is he went to Detroit. There was a promoter there called, his name was Adam Weismiller. He was the brother of Johnny Weismiller, who played Tarzan in the old movies.
Yep.
So he was running a promotion out there. Now, when my grandfather was younger, like when he was in his early teens, he would participate in the carnivals, in the tough man competitions. taking on all comers. And basically, back in those days, the Depression era days, he would do these fights. Basically, MMA before it was MMA, for a basket of food or fruit or whatever. So he grew up tough. And then he took on boxing, and he became a professional boxer. And it led to the encounter with Adam Weissmuller, who was running that Detroit territory. And I guess the legend goes is that when our grandfather got there, he slept on top of the YMCA building. He didn't have a car. He didn't have anything. And then he worked the show the next day and then drove home in a Cadillac. And that's how that's how Bull Curry started. He was already nicknamed Bull Curry growing up, because when he was a young kid, his nickname was the Bull, and maybe Mike can elaborate on that. But there's a legendary story about Wild Bull Curry when he was a beat cop in the streets of Hartford. And as legend goes, a bull got out of its pen. And so he had to chase it down in his beat cop uniform and wrestle the bull to the ground. And that's how the real legend of Wild Bull Curry began. The name, the personality, the aura that Bull Curry had. Now, I've seen pictures of our grandfather and that young calf, so perhaps it was a little exaggerated what size the bull was, but that's how Bull became the Bull. And his first match was for Adam Weissmuller in Detroit. He was the king of the wild men.
Yeah.
He was a notorious heel. A riot starter. I mean, we have a book called The Walking Riot that Flying Fred Curry wrote.
Yep.
And we do have copies of those. And basically,
it there chronicles, you go. Yep, there it is.
How Wild Bull Curry would start riots. Now, these stories are true, 100% true, because they were reported in the newspapers back in those days.
Right.
Yep. Whether it was in Canada, whether it was in Texas, whether it was in Rochester, New York. He would get so much heat, Dave, that the fans would turn against him. And he was never scared to go out in the crowds with the fans.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't take it either. So if a fan took a shot at him, they'd get a shot back at him. So there's stories about him knocking out people for 3 days. One time he got hit in the leg with a bow and arrow in New Mexico. I mean, who does that? But this is the kind of reaction Bull Curry got. I have a story I just told Michael about not long ago, since we've been around our father all the past week and just getting together and telling these stories. And there was a wrestler named Red Bastine.
Yep.
Cauliflower Alley legend.
Yep.
And I was at the Cauliflower Alley Club with my father. And I think it's when my grandfather was posthumously awarded some kind of honor. We were there. And so, you know, dad went to sleep or whatever. I went downstairs. We were in the Riviera Casino. So all the boys, all the older gentlemen, you know, whether it was Nick Bockwinkle or Sputnik Monroe, they're all down there. And so I go to the bar down there and I'm gonna have a drink with Sputnik Monroe and Red Bastine. I mean, who am I? I'm a young kid. I don't know nothing. So Red Bastine and Sputzy were telling me stories about Bull Curry, and Red Bastine was telling me one
story. Oh, I love the story.
Yeah, he was Red Bastine was a young baby face, and he was wrestling Bull Curry in Texas. And it was a dingy, dark arenas back then, so you couldn't really see out. So Red's in the ring. He's got his red, shiny robe on. he's got his bleach blonde hair, you know. And he never saw Bull Curry before the match. It's not like today where you have you have people telling you what to do or setting up your matches. You don't have any producers. Yeah. The heels stay on one end of the building and the baby faces stayed on the other end of the building. Then somebody would come up with some kind of finish and they wouldn't know what each other was going to do till they got in that ring. That's how good of workers they were back then. So Red Bastine is in the middle of the ring and he's waiting for Bull Curry to come out. Nothing, silence. And then all of a sudden at the back of the arena, because it's very dark, the double doors open up, boom. And then the lights from the other hallway can be there. So you're blinded by them. And he couldn't see Bull Curry running into the ring. All he could see is chairs flying up, women, children running, screaming like King Kong was coming in the building. And Red Bastine just sitting there with his mouth open, staring at this. He still can't see the man. He just sees the chaos behind the man. And the ref looks at him and he hits him in the shoulder and says, "Hey, kid, you here to watch the match or you're here to wrestle in the match?" That's how wild Bull Curry was.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, tell me then, talk about the other side of Wild Bull. What did your dad say about Bull as a father?
They were best friends. And Bull Curry was hard on my father. So basically, how my father became a professional wrestler. You know, my grandfather was the wildest, craziest man there was ever in the ring. Outside of the ring, he was the sweetest guy ever. You'd never see him flash possessions or money or anything like that. It's not because he didn't have it, because he was old school, Depression era kid. So if he would stay in a hotel room in a certain town, it would be the cheapest, dingiest hotel you could ever see in your life. But then the next morning, and I've heard people tell me these stories about him, he would get up 5 a.m., cigar, newspaper, go have breakfast, and he would always give to the homeless people that were on the street. And then us growing up, I was lucky enough to see my grandfather where, you know, unfortunately, Mike never met him. He passed away when I was 8 years old, but he liked to garden. He liked to take walks on the beach. You know, I was talking the other day about how I have pictures of him and I when I was like 4 or 5 years old. And this man, Wild Bull Curry, that you see in these magazines, he's walking on the beach with flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt and a green plastic rimmed hat that they wore back in the 80s.
Yeah.
My father adored my grandfather. He looked up to him. He was his hero. Now, just like my father to us, he's your staunchest supporter and is your greatest critic.
Yeah.
So Bull, if every once in a while, Dave, if I call him Pa, that's who I'm talking about. That's what we call Bull Curry Pa.
Yeah.
So it might slip out here and there.
Okay.
But you know, my grandfather was always at my dad's collegiate football games at UConn.
Mm-hmm.
And he took dad with him on the road in the summertime. So my father became a very good football player because one summer in particular, Bull was working the Dallas territory. So he took Flying Fred before he was Flying Fred down with him to partake in the matches, whether it was selling programs or even he had to ref a couple matches sometimes. But the Dallas Cowboys were down there. And my grandfather, they were doing their summer practicing. So my father got to practice with the Cowboys when he was in high school and do their summer routines and their summer workouts.
Yeah.
So he came back, you know, with the Cowboys. He naturally came back ball of fire. He had a all-state, all-American season that season. But it's because my grandfather gave him that opportunity.
Yeah.
And the same thing with wrestling. You know, they didn't go to wrestling school back then. Then they didn't exist at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You were either allowed to be in the business or not. So that's why being a legacy wrestler was a fortunate thing, because not anybody on the street could get in the business unless they were an oddity or they had a certain look or were an athlete or whatever. So the way Dad tells the story is that before his first match, which was in the Boston Garden, I think the promoter was Tony Santos or Paul Bowser. I can't remember which one. And my grandfather, got in the yard and they started just doing a couple holds and a couple turnarounds and all that stuff. And my dad always gravitated towards the high flyer work. Like, so he liked the Argentina Rockas, the Eduardo Carpentiers, things like that. Argentina Rocka was his hero. So, you know, my grandfather's like, okay, throw a drop kick, throw another drop kick, throw another drop kick. So Bull Curry ain't never taken a drop kick in his life in the ring, by the way. But for my father, he thought that's the road he should take. So they go to the Boston Garden, and who does my father have to wrestle that night? For his first match, Dave, first match. He just stumbled around in the yard 3 hours ago. Yeah. He's going to wrestle Boris Malenko.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. Dean Malenko's father.
Yeah.
So he goes in the ring and has the match. It had to stink. I mean, I'm sure it did. So when they get to the back, Boris Malenko goes up to my grandfather. He goes, "This kid's stiff," because he probably stiffed him a million times in there. But that was his first match.
Yeah.
Flying Ted Curry.
And contrary to your grandfather, with that, your grandfather had the wild style. Your dad was the slick, good-looking baby face.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, Fred had that high-flying style and was known for the drop kick. Yeah. And it was the high-flying style, though, in those days was much different than today, right? The drop kick was considered high-flying.
Yeah.
Do you guys know, did your dad ever see any modern wrestling and the high-flying now and what he thought of that style? Because I can only imagine what Fred would have to say about that.
Okay. So first of all, he was very innovative with his moves. You know, head scissors, hurricanranas. He did over the top rope drop kicks. He did drop kicks off the top rope, which I adopted. A lot of like cutesy stuff, like sweet little roll ups, victory rolls, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about being a babyface is you're always trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
So he would always throw in like quick little things to try to get a pin. So he had a lot of cool little moves. Now, as far as his opinion of modern day wrestling, well, him, just like any of the legends, they look at it as, first of all, it's impressive the stuff these guys can do now. These guys do stuff that I wouldn't ever do. I've been removed from it for a while now, and I did a lot of flying stuff. But like to do like reverse hurricanranas on the apron, and to take like bumps, you know, off the apron, like
if you just ask him, though, he said he would do it. He'll say he'll do it.
He wouldn't do any of that. There's no freaking way he'd take one of those bumps. But the way he looks at it, basically, like when he would critique my match, and then when he would look at modern day matches, you know, you don't. They lost sight of, they want to get so much in to impress the fans as far as what they can do. They don't think about what they should do.
Right.
Or how they should do it.
Yeah.
So therefore now there are workers that know how to pace a match. You know, you get a Cody Rhodes, you get a Randy Orton. Those guys know because they know, they grew up in it. But there's other guys can do that too. But when you look at a high-flying, high-hitting modern-day match, they hit each other with so much so quickly that nobody ever sells or registers. Half the time, you don't know who's giving a move and who's taking a move.
Yeah.
And you'll get hit. You'll see a guy get hit with a Meteora, which is insane, and then get up 3 minutes later and come back with something. So dad would say stuff like, geez, what next? What are you going to take, a gun for the finish? Because that's what you have to do. Like, what are you going to do to top what these guys just did? It's crazy. It's crazy. And that's, you know, that's why you see a lot of injuries. These guys and girls, they get hurt a lot because they're doing too much.
Yeah.
And they'll be out for like 7 months, you know, because what you're trying to do is you can't do that forever.
Yeah. Well, do you think, though, were there guys back in the day that would say, well, that damn Fred Curry, what's he going out there throwing 10 drop kicks for?
Oh, you know it.
It's a generational thing, right? It always happens, right?
Yeah, let me tell you how much you cared about that. Zero.
That's right. Well, there is the infamous story that there was a match where Fred threw 15 to 20 drop kicks in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
let's tell... Where does the reality lie in all this? And how did Fred tell that story? Was that a fish story for Fred?
Oh, he'll say it was. First of all, he'll say it was 22 drop kicks in 8 seconds.
Of course, right?
those stories. I mean, my father throwing a drop kick. Is he didn't wait for you to get up? By the way,
no.
Like you either got up or you didn't. So it wasn't like, okay, plant. All right, take the drop kick, bounce off the chest. Okay, we get up, plant again. No, it was.
Yep.
So if you got up, you got up. If you didn't, he'd hit you on your side. He hit you trying to get up. That's why when he wrestled Sheik, the original Sheik at Fair Hat, Sheik would never take a bump. He would just do like, it would make my dad so mad. He would just basically do a spin, put his hand on the ground, and spin back into it. Yeah. So he would never take a bump.
Yeah.
Those guys had an interesting relationship.
Yeah. Well, and I know I talked to Fred not too long ago, right? And he talked a lot about the dropkick. he loved to talk about the dropkick. Mike, you spent a lot of time recently, right? And documenting on TikTok. Fred telling a lot of stories. How often in these conversations did he come up with telling these dropkick stories?
Oh my gosh. So listen, how often? This is the one thing he would always talk about. The number one thing he would talk about when he would talk about these dropkick stories. It wasn't about, it was literally about the excitement he would get when the crowd started counting. Yeah. So like his biggest things, he would keep on, if they kept counting, he'd keep on throwing them. He loved to say that. So anytime it went back to dropkicks, it was always about, you know, the crowds and like that whole connection. And that's what really, from my perspective and from my side of like, you know, honing in on this stuff, really, like that was like his biggest thing. But it would always, the dropkicks, it was when he was talking about me with it, it was always about this like fan connection type of deal.
Yeah.
And it was just constant. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. No,
Mike's right. He would throw as many as they kept counting. He'd keep going. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, tell me now, Fred, you're the oldest son, correct?
Yeah.
Fred, right? Where were you born?
I was born in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. So Fred,
I'm breaking up a little.
No, yeah, sorry. It's okay. Fred, Fred obviously was known as a Midwest guy, but he did have this great stint in the 70s in Texas. This great run, and you know, teaming with Fritz von Erich is a big star. Did he move to Texas? Did he relocate to Texas for that, or was he traveling down for big shows and stuff?
No. When those guys would work a territory, get sent to a territory, they would move down there.
Yeah. So was this prior to you being born, though, Fred?
Yeah. I wasn't part of that. When I was born, he was pretty much. When I was born, he was doing his last stint with WWF.
Okay.
So he was going back and forth to New York.
Right.
But when he did that stint in Texas with Fritz von Erich, and it's a good thing you brought up Fritz von Erich because he's the hero of my father's. He would move down there. So for instance, when he did that, he lived in Texas. When he was the Hawaiian heavyweight champ, he lived in Hawaii, and they would go for like anywhere from 6 to 9 month stints. My grandfather was in Japan for 2 years once.
Yeah.
Never came home.
Yeah.
So yeah, they would live in those areas.
Yeah. And sorry, go ahead. Did someone say something? No. Okay.
No.
All right. So Fred, you were born in what? 77. Did I look it up right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 77.
Give away my secrets. Hey. My secrets.
I was born in 75, Fred, so I'm older than you. So,
okay, all right.
Yeah. So, Mike, you can razz me, not Fred. The way I saw Fred most initially was when he was doing the Bruiser Bedlam stuff with Jerry Graham, which you would have been in your teens, right? Early teens in that time period, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I saw many of those matches.
Yeah, you would have had to been right knee deep in it at that time.
Yeah.
What was it like? Because maybe Mike probably didn't experience this as much.
Nope.
What was it like, Fred, for you? Because you're going to school and your dad's on TV in the area. Yeah. And did people give you, because there's two sides of this probably, right? You have a group that probably love Fred Curry because of the TV. They love wrestling. But there's probably also that, what's that fake shit, what your dad does, and trying to give you a hard time. Did you experience all that?
Yeah. You know, my father in the Columbus area in Ohio, Detroit, he was so revered as a personality that I would certainly get that fake stuff. And, you know, when I was brought up, you know, kayfabe was a real thing. So I was not exposed to the business. I can't remember how old I was. I can remember how he did it though. But when I would go to those matches, you know, I wouldn't think anything of it. So if he was wrestling Jerry Graham Jr. Or the Sheik or whatever, I just thought that's what they did. You know, it's like guys that box, they're actually hitting each other.
Yep.
So, you know, my father wouldn't, divulge that until later. But I would have people tell me all the time that that's fake and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, it's not, you know, and you kind of come to blows sometimes with people over it. You know, you're a little kid.
Yeah.
back in those days, getting in pushing matches with people. But, you know, it wasn't too bad. You know, I would defend it even after I learned that it was a work.
Sure.
I would defend it because that's what he did. And I had the privilege, you know, those matches in those days, he was off like WWF. And you can't call them indie matches. They weren't necessarily, they still had their local TV. But, you know, I saw him wrestle in horse tracks at carnivals. I saw him wrestle in high school gyms. I saw him wrestle in VFWs, you know, all kinds of buildings. And it was fun because in the summertime, I would go up and down the roads with him.
Yeah.
And he still worked regular, but on the weekends he would wrestle shows. And it was really, really cool to, you know, we'd always stay in like hotel rooms and just to be in the back in the locker room amongst those guys. Thinking about it, it's like the great Wojo and all those guys from back then, JW Hawk. I mean, there are so many of them. And Bobo Brazil would show up every once in a while, and just Sabu was before he was Sabu was around.
Sure. Yeah,
he would take care of me a lot, actually. Which is funny because I would come to tag team with him later on in life, but I could just go in and out of the locker rooms as I please. So I thought I was the coolest kid there, you know, because people would see me, other kids would see me just do that because the fans were always hot for the shows. They always were hot for the show.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, and for me to watch those shows, the experience, I can still smell what the locker room smells like. I can still smell what a ring smells like. That's not just from doing it myself, but from back in those days. So like when I started professional wrestling, to be involved in it was like all that was like reminiscent of those days that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And just to be around it was so cool. But like those matches, before I knew it was work, I don't know how I didn't put it together because every match was the same in every town between all the guys. So like the match between my father and the Sheik, I've seen it 100 times and I could call it right now for you. You know, the Sheik would sometimes come out in a limo. My dad would be in the ring and the people would be cheering for him. Dad would get a little shine spot. Sheik would try to come through the ropes. He'd cut him off. Then the Sheik would end up pulling a gimmick out, whether it's a pencil or a foreign object, hit my dad in the throat. Suddenly my dad would get color. They would walk the walk across Texas, not really Texas, but into the stands. Sometimes they would go into the bathroom, into where the food was, where the merch was, fighting all over the place. They'd get back in the ring. And dad would end up hitting him with a few drop kicks. And eventually, so he hit him with like 3. And on the third one, the gimmick would fly up in the air. And my dad's bleeding, right? He can't find this thing. Because Sheik was very good about hiding it from the ref. It was an art form, you know? Because when people would see that, they'd be like, oh my God, it's right there. It's right there. Ref would be like, I don't see anything. So the heat, right? And then dad would end up getting the foreign object or the pencil or whatever. And he'd look at Sheik. And he'd touch his head with the blood. And he'd look at the object. And he'd look at Sheik. And he'd start hopping up and down and fired up, and the people would say, yeah, and he'd go over and he'd hit Sheik in the head until he got color, and then the ref would see dad with the foreign object, ding 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 ding, DQ. Seen it 100 times.
Yeah.
It was amazing every time.
Yeah. And Mike, it's a different experience for you, right? Because you weren't there, you didn't experience this, but yet you're hearing these stories and you've heard them all the over the years, right?
Yeah.
And you hear like Fred sharing these stories, all these other wrestlers, and you read all these, and that's your dad. It's gonna be, I mean, it's fascinating to hear for me to hear Fred tell that story. For you, it's a different level, right?
It's insane. Surreal
that, hey, that guy's your dad doing that.
Yeah. It's even crazier. It's even more intense now because this whole time, right? I really didn't like, I wasn't as interested in wrestling. I mean, I remember being, you know, 13 and going through memorabilia with my dad and he was selling them on eBay and I would help him. And even then, now in this moment, specifically more than ever, I'm like thinking about those times. I'm like, what the hell were you doing, Mike? And I guess it was for a good reason because this like discovering like all these stories in this newfound, like, you know, enthusiasm is insane. And what I'm uncovering and what I'm discovering is just like this genuine, true, amazing, insane story that I've fallen in love with and more than I could have imagined, you know? Yes. So thank God for hearing stories like this from my, and I get to hear them from my brother. When we were talking over the weekend, I'm losing my shit. You know what I mean? I'm like really, because like each piece of the puzzle as I'm uncovering like this legacy as a whole, you know, and I haven't got to some of the craziest parts yet on the TikTok.
Yeah.
It's just wild. Fuck. It's a wild ride. I love it.
Yeah. And
he makes me remember things that I forgot. Mike, when he gets all excited about hearing these stories, it's incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's great, right? Because that's what happens, right? When there's a new generation or a new person or whoever discovers this and they're hyped up. Well, that kind of rejuvenates that excitement in you, right? And you start getting the memories and it's kind of cool. That's how it works. And I know we talked about your dad and how proud he was of the drop kick.
Yes.
Yeah. I do know from talking to Fred, meeting Fred a couple of times, that another thing he was very proud of was the 1972 Most Popular Wrestler of the Year. And I've heard Fred mention that many times. And I believe, did he still have the plaque, trophy, whatever? I remember seeing that one time somewhere in Chillicothe. I think he had something showing 1970 Most Popular Wrestler.
There's so many somewheres. We're missing we're waiting.
Yeah.
It's funny about that PWI professional most popular. He didn't even know Dave about it. And I forget what I was getting into, because I was, you know, those guys back then didn't read the PWI or whatever.
Sure.
He had it split with Jack Briscoe, and they were tagging in Australia that year.
Oh yeah.
So this is when I started to get interested in wrestling myself, and I looked up like the PWI. It was either a book or a magazine or whatever, and I'm looking at like, because I'm trying to like believe my father about how over he was and how legendary Bull Curry was. So I'm like, let's take a look at this. I want to see if this is legit. So I'm looking at most popular wrestler of the year. And I'm going down. I'm going back, right? And it's like 87, Hulk Hogan, blah, blah, blah. Then I keep going down the list. It's 1972. There he is.
And you had to say, damn, he was right.
And so I go and I go, did you know about this? He goes, no, about what? And I showed him. He was like, son of a gun. He's like, he might have forgot. Yeah, he was like, "Will you believe me now?"
Yeah,
I'm like, yeah. But he, you know, he was mad proud of that. He should have been too, because every name on that list of most popular wrestler of the year are all legends, superstars.
Well, especially in 72, right, when every territory had those guys, right? I mean, that's something, especially for 72.
Yeah, yeah,
it's deeper pull.
You still had Bruno around. You had Pedro Morales. You had Dory Funk Jr. Tons of guys. So for him to get selected for that, it says something. You know, I mean,
exactly.
You look at that back then. That meant a lot more than like it does now. You look like the PWI 500. You write your own name in there.
Sure. Well, it's more now about, you know, who can you put on the cover to sell a magazine or two, but back then, you know, it was a little, and Mike, this might be a better, let's ask you this, because Fred kind of gave the perspective of what Fred was like as a dad, but that's when he was an active wrestler.
Yeah.
You talked to us a little bit about what was Fred like when he's a little more removed from the business. Was Fred just kind of that normal retired guy?
No, not at all. No, he's larger than life. He's always larger than life, constantly.
Yeah.
Always talking shit everywhere. Like, it really is. Like, there is a sense of every room that he walked into where, like, there was this, like, presence about him. It wasn't normal. He wasn't, like, a normal dad in any way, shape, or form, other than the fact of he would, you know, he'd cook us amazing dinners, you know what I mean? And he would, you know, he's really involved in sports. But he was not just... it wasn't normal. No, he was flying Fred Curry.
Yeah.
From the beginning. So now from this other side of it, yeah, there's a lot that goes on, and it's very, I mean, it was a long, funny road, but no, he's a star through and through, like truly.
So Fred was quite the cook. Is that what you're saying?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's an amazing cook.
What did Fred cook? What was his special?
Oh my gosh. He's great at cooking meat, grape leaves, or I mean, he's Lebanese, right?
Yeah.
So my favorite food that he cooks ever is his stuffed grape leaves.
Oh, yeah.
I dream about them. I love them. The best. Number one. He's really good at cooking. I mean, he cooking fish, vegetables. He would make like really fancy mango, like fruit platters.
Are there Fred Curry recipes then that are getting passed down as well?
Yes. We have the grape leaf recipe. Yeah. We do have that.
That's remarkable.
Yes.
That's man, that sounds like a Curry thing, does it not? I mean, it's just there's that whole other side, right? that sounds like a
You know, he learned how to cook when he was working in the Detroit territory. He would go into certain restaurants and they would let him in the kitchen. whoever owned it, and he would cook on the line.
Yeah.
When he was a wrestling star. And that's how, you know, a lot of the there's a lot of Greek restaurants in Detroit. And there was a couple of them, the Grecian Garden. He would go back there and he would work a dinner service. That's crazy.
It really is. Like,
you know that, Mike?
It sounds, our family stories, I mean, to a certain extent, it did sound like crazy. Like, it's like unbelievable stuff, right? It's not normal, you know? Even your stories, Freddie, growing up, your high school year, that's like, what do you do that in movies?
Yeah.
Like, how is it like this? I don't know.
That cracks me up. I mean, I love stuffed grape leaves, so I'm very jealous that I never got to taste Fred's.
Let's get back on it.
Yeah. Made me lose my train of thought there for a minute. Got hungry. And so, again, I get to meet Fred a few times, right? And
They're really good. We can talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's making me hungry. I totally lost my train of thought now. I'm totally thinking about food. Again, I met Fred a few times. Like I said, talked to him. And he was always that personality, right? Because it's that what you saw from Fred, that was Fred. There wasn't a lot of difference between that guy that I oversaw on TV and the guy I talked to over the years, you know, at different times and met. I mean, I remember when I first met him in Chillicothe, he knew who I was because I talked to him and everything else. And I remember walking in this gym, and he was right there, right inside the door. That's where his table was, right? He had all these trophies and stuff and everything. And I walk in, he goes, "I know you." And he goes, "Dave, come here." And he's like, he just grabbed me. And then he's like, he was showing me, "Oh, look at this, look at this, look at this." He was just showing me all this stuff. But, you know, gave me the book, the Wild Bull book. He gave me one and all this stuff. And he loved to talk wrestling. Loved to tell those stories. And every time I talked to him, it was like that, right? It's like he was telling them to you for the first time. And you guys talked about, and Fred, you talked about, right, obviously in Detroit, it's very, you know, Sheik versus Curry, very well known. If it hadn't been for a guy named Bobo Brazil, that probably would have been the most prominent feud in Detroit, right? Yeah. It's Sheik versus Curry. Behind the scenes, were the Currys and the Farhats, were they close? Were they friends?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They were great friends. Bull and Sheik, they had their own rivalry. And it would go to them against each other. I mean, really, our grandfather was the innovator of the hardcore style. And Sheik was a little younger. So Sheik adopted that style from/with Bull Curry.
Yeah.
So when they would tag together, they would go crazy. And they were just such oddities and personalities that they would be great. But then when they went against each other, it would be even better. And that's one thing about my grandfather that I love. When he was a baby face, very rarely, he was a baby face like Steve Austin was a baby face. And I'm not talking about saying any comparison other than the point that he never changed his personality.
Yeah, it's kind of the anti-hero, right?
Yeah, he was a baby face because he was put in the situation to be a baby face. I've seen him do it. I had tapes where I've seen him do it a few times, and people go bananas when he's the baby face. Like, for instance, that Johnny Valentine video. Bull Curry's the baby face in that. But he's not being Bull Curry. He's not going around slapping hands. So with the fire hats, I dare say Sheik would slap me around if I was saying his name out loud, especially on camera. But we were always close with them. I remember growing up going to Sheik's house. And then, like I said, Sabu used to watch after me in the locker rooms to the point where my second match that I ever had, the original Sheik was there. He had Sabu drive him down. Sabu, Sheik, and Joyce came too, Sheik's wife. And it was such an honor. But I have a painting that the Sheik painted on the side. Uh-huh. I should have brought it up here. I have a painting of that he did of Wild Bull Curry, and it said it was for me. It's two grandson of Wild Bull Curry. This was before Mike and Nick were around. Nick particularly is very jealous that I have this painting. I'm not giving it to him either. But that's how close they were.
Yeah.
For him to paint me a picture of Bull Curry says a lot. And you know, there's other stories about their shenanigans and things in the past, but yeah, they always rode in the, you know, my father and Sheik would always drive together to the shows in Detroit. He would always stay at Sheik's house, the mansion there.
Yeah, the mansion. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they were close, very close.
Well, I will be soon. I'll be talking. I'm also going to talk to Supermouth Dave Drayson, who managed Sheik, obviously entrenched in that Detroit wrestling. We're going to talk a little more about Fred, the career side, right? A little more nuts and bolts, kind of not the man as much as talking with you guys. But I'm curious to hear some of his, you know, right? Because I think Detroit wrestling, Dave Drayson's one of those guys I think of. And
he's the expert.
He is. So he's very excited to come to talk to me and pay tribute to your father. And again, it's one of those, there's so many guys in the wrestling that you could say it for, right? That were underappreciated, right? Because a lot of it's timing. Right. Because you know, there's not as much videotape of certain eras and certain time periods. I've always lumped Fred Curry in there as one of those guys that's underappreciated, does not get spoken enough about. That's why I'm glad, Mike, I'm so glad when I saw you doing the TikTok, because I'm like, this is what you do, right? To bring this to the modern generation in a way that they're going to the clickbait soundbite or whatever it's called. I don't know. I'm old too.
TikTok.
I have a TikTok, but I just post weird pictures. It's I don't even know what I'm doing.
But, we love it. No, it's cool. It's fun. But that really is. That's what it was. And oh my God, there's so much. There's so cool. So much to tell that really honestly has so much to do with what we're watching right now. So it's like, it's not just like nostalgia. It's relevance. It's crazy. Yeah.
But it was so cool. It's so cool. The clips of Fred on there and seeing him talk. And you had clips right up almost to the day, right? Talking with him. And I always love seeing them when they pop up, right? And you did them. It was just heartwarming. But now it's a totally different perspective, right? Because it's not just, I don't know how you describe it, right? It's not just hearing him tell these stories. Now it's almost like, man, that preserving that last, those last days, the last time. And that's pretty incredible. And, like I said, we have that out there. You know, I obviously want to do this tribute episode, right? There's all these things. People are, unfortunately, because of the situation, people are now talking about Fred, you know, a little in the moment. But when you guys, as his sons, and right, I mean, preserving the legacy and everything else, what would you like people to remember when they think of Fred Curry in the future? What do you
keep? The Dropkick King. Honestly, what a great baby face. Like, I want them to remember just like, I really want them to remember the stamp that was left on pro wrestling, because the thing is, when you're talking about people like my dad, Flying Fred Curry, like you're talking about a legacy that spans past himself, right? So we've got, you know, literally the most feared man in wrestling. And then with like one of the most loved, the Dropkick King, the Heartbreaker, like that kind of polarity, like what that... Oh God, there's so much juicy tidbits. I'm never going to stop talking about this. It's insane.
Sure. Yeah.
So what I want them to remember is what a freaking badass Dropkick King he was. And you know, his stamp in pro wrestling, which is a big stamp.
Yeah. I mean, in the 70s context, the drop kicks, he was pushing wrestling, right? Towards the direction it is now, whether he loved it or not.
Yeah.
He was helping to push it, to evolve it, to advance it on, which that's what the greats do, right? They don't just come and do it. They develop, they enhance it. They put their mark on it so much that it changes the sport in some way. Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, he has been called the world's greatest babyface.
Yes.
Eddie Kreischman and Abdullah Farouk, the Grand Wizard, both labeled him as the world's greatest babyface.
Yes.
And he was, and that's what he wants to be remembered as. And he when Mike does these, did these interviews with him and these TikToks, you can just listen to the passion, and thank goodness Mike has done all this, because it has preserved our father's thoughts about it. I can tell stories all day, but there's nothing like seeing it in front of you.
Sure.
And when he talks about his wrestling career, and when he cuts baby face promos, but the difference is it's legitimate. So when he says stuff like, "For you people out there who believed in me, who stood by my side, I will never let you down." Things like that. That's the real deal. That's the real article. And that's the way Mike's right, 100% right. That's the way he was in real life. Anything. To me personally, he was super inspirational in that fashion, where, you know, I take those notions with me every day, and it makes you a better person. And that's he's the world's greatest baby face.
Yeah.
World's greatest baby face.
Did Fred ever get to work heel anywhere? I didn't think so.
There was two instances. When he was tagging with Jack Briscoe in Australia, the last match that they had before they left was against each other. So babyface match, right? Of course, in every babyface match, one of them's got to be a little heelish.
Yeah. Right.
So he was a little heelish in that one, and he loved it. He loved it, by the way. And then there was another time. I can't remember who my grandfather was wrestling at the time. Somebody that was taking liberties with him in the ring. So my dad was always watching my grandfather's matches from the back. So he knows the difference.
Yeah.
So he saw, and the guy was a big time babyface. I can't remember who he was, but dad stormed the ring on a shoot. And went after the guy and punched the guy and all that. So the people started booing my father. And my father wanted to go with it. He wanted to stay heel because he was getting he got a lot of heat for doing that. Of course, the Sheik was like, no. You can't do that. You got to be a baby face. So how they turned him baby face again was they got like a hypnotist or something in there. Boba Brazil brought him in the ring.
That's right, with the headbutt, the cocoa butt.
And gave him a cocoa butt, and he shook out of it and became a baby face again.
I remember
that. Oh my God, I didn't know that part of the story.
I do remember
Dad
that story.
Told me, it's on our TikTok. Dad told me that story about when he thought someone was messing with the ring and how he went in, but I didn't get this last bit of it.
Yeah, that's how he became a baby face again. Boba Brazil brought him in the ring. And he said, Fred, dad was grimacing to Bobo, and they were like good friends in the ring. And Bobo says, you know, Fred, I hate to do this to you, but I got to do what I got to do. And he cocoa butted him, which was Bobo's move. And dad took the bump and then shook it off, and it started hopping up and down again. And the people, people believed it.
That's great.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that is great. Okay, so. Let's wrap this up. Talking about the Curry Wrestling Legacy TikTok.
Yeah.
Mike, how can people find that?
What's the easiest way? So you can find it a couple different ways. You can go to currywrestlinglegacy.com. So right now I did our shop page is down just because I didn't want to be processing orders like right now. I just didn't want to be dealing with
course,
that.
Of course.
So that's one thing. But currywrestlinglegacy.com. TikTok, right? Flying Fred Curry. If you search Flying Fred Curry on TikTok, you don't even have to type in Curry. You're going to find me. It's going to be in the top users or my actuals. Yeah, that's Flying Fred Curry is the TikTok handle. So there you go.
All right. But the shop will be back up.
Right? Oh, the shop will be back up. Yeah. Like probably in like a little bit of time. Like I want to focus on what we got right now.
Of course. Yeah.
And will you that we mentioned that we saw the Bull Curry book. Do you still have copies of that? That will be back up on the shop. when it's open. Is that right?
Oh, 100%. And yep. There's going to be signed copies too.
There you go.
Flying Fred Curry.
All right.
Oh, so, yeah. I got them. I've got about 40 copies left.
Good. All right. So what? Obviously, I know you guys are still processing, right? You lost your father. There's obviously a lot going on.
One real quick. Can I interject one thing?
Sure.
Okay. My favorite thing, if anybody does go to currywrestlinglegacy.com, uh-huh. in the Your Story page in the navigation, there's a place where you can submit a memory.
Okay.
Right now, I'm finding that's like, so I've gotten some people to, you know, found themselves on my webpage. They submit memories of Flying Fred Curry, Wild Bull Curry, anything about pro wrestling. Like, there's a whole write-up on it about what to do. That's probably the number one best thing, because I'm also working on my dad's handwritten autobiography book, right? So I'm putting all that together. So that's one good thing.
Well, that leads that.
But now, yes,
straight into my next question. Obviously, I know you haven't had full time to process at all. But what is there? Are there any direction on what kinds of things can we expect from the future? You just mentioned
we're not going to stop.
You just mentioned autobiography.
Yeah. There's that. So I've got pages of my dad's it's his handwritten stories. I mean, he gave this to me a couple years ago to work on. It's kind of one of those sore subjects. I didn't get it done, but I've been gathering probably some of the most legit information possible, stories, fan connections. It's hard to process all of it because there's so much information, and to dilute these stories into, it just is genuine gold. I don't even know what else to say. So it's on top of that. Also, I'm like building this. So I've gotten to Claude AI, right? So I've been scanning all of the memorabilia, all of the memorabilia. So what I've been creating is this living archive database, 50 years pretty much of wrestling cards, programs, stories, articles, photos, all searchable, thousands of wrestlers, like thousands of forgotten legends. It's like insane.
Yeah.
That's also going to be going. Then there's freaking Freddy, who's I'm going to let finish.
Well, we're like Mike said, Dave, we're not going to stop. We're going to keep going. And it's also incorporated with us getting back involved in the wrestling business.
Yes. Getting
it back involved in the wrestling business. You know, since Mike started doing this, he's ignited a fire under me to a yearning almost for this business. And it's not just talking about it, though. You know, there's a lot of people that reach out to us to come, not just do podcasts, but come to the shows and be involved in the shows and to get back involved with the wrestling business helps the Curry legacy live on.
Sure,
we're not done yet. Flying Fred Curry's not done yet. And that's the goal. That's the ambition. We'll have those world's greatest babyface t-shirts made too, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to ask that. Could we see some, you know, further merchandise, some shirts? This is, I mean, the golden age for independent wrestling figures. Lots of independent wrestling companies out there, or independent toy companies, you know, doing figures. Can you imagine a cool ass 2-pack with
Bull and Fred? What are you talking about? It's a goal. That's in my top 10 goal list.
I mean, who doesn't want a 2-pack of Bull Curry and Fred Curry, right?
Every freaking mother trucker out there.
Hell, let's go. We go deeper. Hey, we could throw in the Rocket in there if we wanted, right? We could.
I might have a couple drop kicks left for me.
You go. Of course. But can you throw 15 to 20 in 10 seconds, Fred?
No.
Okay.
I tried. I couldn't do it when I was 22 years old. Forget about now.
Oh well, guys. Again, thanks for coming on. I could talk about Fred forever. I love Fred. I've always loved Fred. He was always, every time, like I said, I spoke to him a few times, met him. He was always great to me. So giving, so much fun to talk to. I was, you know, again, condolences. I'm so sorry to hear about his passing, but I'm glad to see, right, there's a passion to continue on that family legacy and to continue preserving. Cause right, this is the age of nostalgia, right? It's the time period for people who are loving the history, and there's so many avenues for it, right, with technology and whatnot, so it's the perfect time to do that, and so I'm excited to see what comes forth from you guys and the Curry family, and like you said, go ahead.
We certainly appreciate your support, Dave. I mean, you've been great about keeping our family tradition and our family legacy in the public as much as you can, whether it's helping us to move the books or doing these interviews. I mean, I've interviewed with you a couple times. Mm-hmm. And, it's important to us because, you know, those recordings back then, they weren't kept. Most of those TV tapes were taped over again and again because film was so expensive. So to keep talking about it, keep the dialogue, that's what keeps it alive.
It was so remarkable that when I did the interview with Fred here not too long ago, I don't know how long it's been, within the last year, I think, whenever it was, I got so much feedback of people that said, thank you, because I remember Fred Curry and hadn't thought about him for a while. And then your interview came up and it just brought back this flood of memories from my childhood and watching Fred and hearing him talk was just so amazing. And I got so much feedback for that episode. It was pretty, I loved it. It was incredible. That's exactly what I wanted, right? That's exactly what I wanted to do. Much like I think the approach of Mike, it's like, preserve it while you can, yeah. So it was important. But I will tell you, if we do get that, Fred Curry t-shirt, I'll probably be one of the first ones to buy one. So I'm looking forward to that. Nice. Again, thank you guys. We'll stay in touch. Obviously, I'm sure we'll probably all talk. And Mike, I'm so glad. Again, I've talked to Nick before. I've talked to Fred before. Now I'm glad we completed the trilogy here.
My pleasure.
And having you guys on, I love your TikTok. I love it. I follow it. It's wonderful, wonderful must see for any wrestling fan. They've got
to go.
That's right. So again, guys, I'm sure we'll talk again. We'll be in contact again. I will forever support your family and everything you guys do. Thank you for your time. One last time, condolences. And I know it's a tough time. I know you a busy time. So I appreciate you carving a little out for us and helping us fans, pay tribute to your dad.
Available on all streaming platforms. It's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course, all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
Okay, and thank you to the two Curry brothers and Dave Drayson for coming on and sharing with me and helping me to celebrate the life and career and remembering Flying Fred Curry. Guys, follow me on social media. I'm on all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you will find me there. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. Go check out all of the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platforms, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Okay, next episode, guys, my guest will be former preliminary wrestler Tom Stone, who worked both in the WWF and the AWA, but worked several other territories and has lots of great stories to tell. It's a fun episode. It is a fun interview. And Tom has so much to talk about that we're going to have him back on in the future for part two, because we did not even begin to cover
all the great stories he had. So join me next episode for that. Once again, thank you for everybody for always listening to me, but specifically thank you for listening to this episode and helping us remember and celebrate Flying Fred Curry. And until next episode, guys, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.